Tango Tango Papa 2117, July 5th, 2022.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good afternoon, good evening, Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Willard, Utah. So, I looked, it's been a bit, I guess a little bit less than a month since the last podcast. I think the last one was on June the 17th. So, since then I've been home, took a few days off, and then now I'm back at work. I've been back at work, let's see, when did I come back to work? Saturday, kind of like Saturday morning. I picked a load up as I was at home, and then I picked a load up right near home. That was on what day? Thursday, I believe. Picked the load up, but then because of the holiday weekend, the 4th of July weekend, it didn't deliver. It delivered in Clearfield, Utah. That's up north of Salt Lake City, greater Salt Lake City area. It delivered, it was supposed to deliver anytime after 7 p.m. on July the 4th, which was yesterday, up to 7 p.m. today, July the 5th. So I left, I picked the load up, and then I was home all day Friday. So I just hung on to the load, so I dropped the load where I pay to park my trailer at, near my house. And so I spent all day Friday at home, and then came back to work on early Saturday morning. That's when I started driving to Utah. Now, as it turns out, I could have left. It would have been probably smarter to leave, Now, do I have my days right? I believe I do. I think I left on Saturday and then drove Saturday, Sunday, and then a portion of Monday. And so I should have left. I would have been better off leaving on Sunday and then driving all day Sunday, all day Monday, and then getting there today. Because when I got there yesterday, I got there to the place where the load delivered at. I got there yesterday afternoon about... I don't know, it was like 2:30 in the afternoon, and nobody's there. Of course, I wasn't expecting them to be there, because the information that I had said that it was going to be after 7 p.m. Well, 7 p.m. came and went, nobody's there. So I ended up spending the night there along with several other trucks that had the kind of the same issue. For trucks from my company, and plus other companies. So they didn't actually, they reopened the office at 5 a.m. this morning. So I don't know, it was around 5:30. I woke up 5:30 a.m. And it's mountain time. 5:30 a.m. and went inside, got dressed, went inside, and they, did the dropping, or the paperwork, and then I did the drop and hook. So in the meantime, then they had me picking up a load in Twin Falls, Idaho, that delivers to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So, all the way across the top of the country, basically, or most of the way, at least from Twin Falls, Idaho to Bethlehem, PA. That's roughly, I don't know, 2,400 miles, something like that, give or take a few. So, in any case, I've picked the load up, and so I've made it here to Willard, Utah, and that's where I'm taking my break at, and then start driving again in the morning once the break's over. So, but in the meantime, I thought I'd record a podcast. So, if you listen to the last podcast, I played the Peter Zion clip where he was talking about his basically the topics that he covers in his newest book, the name of which, The End of the World is Only Just the Beginning. And by the way, I bought the book, the audiobook version, and I'm almost all the way through it. I've still got a little bit of it left. But I highly recommend the book. The book is very, very interesting, packed with lots of information. And it's really, you know, really an interesting book. But in it, of course, he's talking about the two topics that he's really concerned with, the geopolitical topics, the demographic collapse that's kind of happening worldwide, and also the end of the globalization area. So the United States has sort of over time, the United States has sort of lost interest in maintaining this global order where we've had all this world trade happening, where all these countries, the United States is pretty well guaranteeing that the world's oceans and all this, were secure and all this shipping could take place. And so all these different countries were able to suddenly specialize and industrialize over the, especially over the last 30 years. And so you had all of this manufacturing that was able to take place, and really inexpensive goods, and really to the detriment, actually, of the United States. You know, the United States actually made a sacrifice in that it did hurt our manufacturing. And that was the people that made that policy actually knew that it was going to hurt our manufacturing, but they did it anyway, in any case, that's coming to an end now. It's kind of unraveling at the same time as the demographics are unraveling. And so what Peter Zion does is tries to make sense of what we can expect in the near future, as well as the coming years, coming decades. Making predictions is kind of fraught with problems. But the demographics are, you can't argue with them. A lot of countries have just fallen off a cliff. Now, the United States really hasn't as bad. I mean, we've kind of screwed our demographics up with all the abortions, certainly. But even at that, we are in probably the best position of any country in the world, not only because of our population. At least the baby boomers did have kids, and so you got the millennials, and plus we've had we've had immigration, especially from Mexico, and of course that's drying up, and but also, the United States, we've got a really great, probably the best chunk of land on the planet in the form of North America. It's really probably the prime real estate in the entire world. So, you know, we're probably going to make it through, but, you know, I think we will make it through, but, you know, the coming changes. But there's, you know, there's a problem. In the meantime, we've all kind of gotten, you know, used to all these goods that just, you know, the really inexpensive ones, and it's just at our whim, and, you know, and we don't realize that the parts, and of course he goes into it fairly extensively in the book, the parts, let's say, you know, like for a car, for example, a car takes 30,000, the average car has 30,000 parts that make up the car. 30,000. Now think about that. You don't think about that, do you? You think, oh, it's just, you know, a piece here, a piece there. 30,000 parts. And those parts are sourced all over the place. Many of the products that we use cross international borders back and forth multiple times. Sometimes things need to be processed in this country and then sent to China, and then China does whatever, and then that gets sent somewhere else, and some other country does something or other, and then it gets sent back. And because the maritime shipping has gotten so cheap, because it's been protected, no pirates, you know, countries at war, whatever. Because the shipping across the oceans has gotten so cheap in the containerized era, you know, they can just send anything anywhere. So, like, he goes through a pair of jeans. You know, you get the, you know, the cotton sourced from one place, and then the zinc for the zippers is, you know, comes from here, and, you know, and the little pieces of brass, like the rivets, that comes from somewhere, and, you know, it's just crazy how much, you know, where stuff is coming from. So you have something as complicated as a car, and, you know, that's something else. So all it takes is just, you know, some supply chain issue, and you're stuck. So all of that's going to be breaking down. And then you throw in on top the stupid governments and the corporations. You know, they've got this idea that they're going to just hurry us up and force us off of fossil fuels. Because they, you know, a few years ago they decided, well, we're, you know, fossil fuels are not the future. Electric is the future. We're going to stop investing in fossil fuels. And so they stopped. So the fossil fuel investments dropped by half. So that's part of the reason why we're seeing an increase in the price. But in the meantime, there's all kinds of things besides gasoline or diesel, which those are just absolutely necessary to modern life. There's all kinds of other things that come out of fossil fuels. Pharmaceuticals, just to name one. You know, and there's many other ones. Fertilizer. There's been a fertilizer. They've managed to screw up the fertilizer market, and then plus the Ukraine war didn't help. And so right now the harvest that's going to be coming in September has been short fertilizer, so that's already baked into the system. So there's going to be some famines. Who gets hurt by famines? You know, we may bitch because the price of food goes up. But there's going to be countries that starve, people that literally starve because of the stupid idea that, oh, well, we'll just, we need to get off of these fossil fuels. We're addicted to fossil fuels. We're going to force everyone onto electricity, you know, wind and solar. save the planet. Blah, blah, blah. You think they're going to take responsibility for what they've, for the, you know, there could be 1.5 billion people die or more of starvation. You think they're going to take responsibility for that? Of course they won't. We'll know in September, you know, maybe sometime in September we're going to know what the world harvest is. And no doubt it's going to be down because, like I say, this fertilizer problem has been ongoing for some time now. And it's not going to be a bumper crop without, because a lot of countries didn't, they planted without fertilizer or with maybe only a third of the fertilizer that they would normally use. So it's going to be a problem. So, but in any case, you know, I think it's also useful to understand that even though, yeah, I'm in the United States, I'm probably going to, you know, probably most of my listeners are in the United States, probably going to do, you know, be able to, you know, kind of ride this out, whatever. But at the same time, we've all become dependent on all these chips and all of the clothing and all of this and all of that. What happens if we can't get it? Try to buy a new car right now. In some cases, it's not even possible. Or you're going to pay through the nose for it, if you can. So I got to thinking, you know, what do I need? I've got, as far as, you know, physical things, what do I need? You know, let's say for the next 2 years, 3 years, even 5 years, what do I need? Obviously, besides food. So, you know, like for my house, for example, the only appliance that I'd never replaced was the dishwasher. So, I've had the house now 27 years, believe it or not. So, 27-year-old dishwasher that still worked fine. A good chunk of that time I've used it, it's been used fairly sparingly because I haven't, you know, I've been driving a truck for a good chunk of the time, so I haven't been home all the time. So it's been used. It hasn't been used as much because typically the dishwasher, if you use it twice a day, it's going to probably last maybe 10 years if you're lucky. Then you're going to have to replace it. So I don't know how much usage it actually has had, but it, you know, I've used it over time. And but even though it was still working, I decided, I'm going to see if I can replace it. So I got to checking, and there's a brand, Bosch, B-O-S-C-H, Bosch, that it's a German brand, but they actually manufacture in the United States, at least. You know, they like, what Bosch does is likes to, they set up manufacturing in the country where the whatever it's going to be sold. So I think Bosch, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, it's, you know, at least the one I bought was manufactured in the United States. So what I did, I contacted the appliance store that I bought my Speed Queen washing machine from a few years ago. I contacted them, and they just happened to have a Bosch dishwasher in stock, and I was kind of willing to take whatever it was they had. And she was saying, well, we're kind of short on supply because of supply chain issues, obviously. But you know, so they had Bosch, the lowest end is a 100 series, and then they, you have a 300 series, 500 series, 900 series, and then I forget what the top one is called. It's whatever it is. But in any case, she had a 300 series in stock. And so I went ahead and just bought it kind of right over the phone, used my credit card. That's what I did whenever I bought the washing machine from them a few years ago. Bought it over the phone. And so while I was home, the guy delivered it, and so I'm really happy with that. So what I did, I gave the old dishwasher, which still works, gave that to my youngest brother because he and his wife were having problems with the dishwasher that they had been giving them trouble, and so gave him the dishwasher, and so at least it kind of continues to be used, and it, who knows, it may last a long time. Might not have been necessary for me to replace it, but why take a chance? But in the meantime, I'm thinking, what else might I need if I really decided I needed something, let's say within the next 5 years, as far as, especially electronics, things that might have some sort of Chinese manufacturing involvement. Because China, it's pretty clear if you listen to Peter Zion, he lists all of the things that are, that are about to break with China, especially the demographics problem that they have. But not only that, but just the energy problem. They have to import 85% of their energy. What's happening to energy prices? The United States kind of pulling out of the security business, global security business. And so at some point, something's going to really go haywire with all the shipping, and the world shipping is going to just probably, could come to us, who knows, it could come to a ceasing halt. And then things just stop. So what might I need? What about LED light bulbs? Would that be something to get? Because they're cheap right now. You can go to a place like Lowe's or Home Depot or Walmart and, get cheap LED light bulbs. Probably wouldn't hurt to buy a package of them. Stock up a little bit, even though they last a long time. Why wait? What about things like routers? Those are fairly complicated devices, and they, they're coming from Southeast Asia. It's where most of that stuff's manufactured at. What happens when that goes away? It becomes a problem. Not to mention the cell phone stuff. Apple has doubled down. Every time they can, they double down on manufacturing, insisting keeping the manufacturing of the iPhone in China. So Apple is really exposed to anything, any little hiccup that goes wrong. Apple is really exposed. And so there may be a several year gap between iPhone models at some point in the near future. The same thing could happen with Android. Even though Android is like the phone that I have is manufactured in South Korea, South Korea's got its own problems. And it's still, the subject to all these different parts coming from different places, and things traveling back and forth, and you've got these different cost structures for all the different components. So there's different labor rates. You don't pay this, you know, you don't pay someone working in a, let's say, you know, doing the high-end stuff in a semiconductor plant. You pay them one rate wage, and then somebody that molds the rubber case for the phone, that's a, obviously they're paid, that's a much lower end wage. So the same is true for each individual component. There's a cost structure to it. And there's a labor rate that's associated with it. All kinds of different countries. The more complicated something is, the more parts something has, the more, you know, the more likely it is that it's kind of spread out a bunch of different countries, and, you know, so it's all this stuff's going to unravel. And if, you know, and let's just say that there's no pirates and people play nice and, it's, you know, all the people are going to get along, all these countries that the United States is forced to get along, you know, in our absence, they're all just going to get along okay. There's still a demographic problem. You know, you need young people working in, you know, in these factories, and they're running out of them. You know, especially on the lower end, which that's basically China. China's, you know, really, you know, they've done a lot of low-end stuff. That's what they do. They're really not, you know, I know some people think, oh, China's doing the higher-end stuff. Not really. They're really doing more of the low-end stuff, and they haven't really been able to crack even though they've stolen, you know, plans, let's say, from, you know, Germans or Americans, you know, the high-end stuff, they've not been able to crack it. You know, just because they've stolen stuff doesn't mean that they can, they can try to reverse engineer stuff. But their product, their quality isn't all that great, generally. So, but, you know, it's worth thinking about. What would I need over the next 5 years, even if I don't need it now? Or is there anything that would be useful? Should I buy a few extra pairs of jeans, just in case? You know, because if all this, you know, this maritime shipping that we've known for the last number of years, if that breaks down, then all of a sudden the cheap jeans from India or wherever, Pakistan, wherever it's made, wherever it seems to be coming from, it's not going to be available anymore. You know, and to be perfectly honest, that's, you know, I buy jeans at Walmart. I'm not splurging on high-end stuff. So it might be useful to just go in, you know, next time I go home, just, hey, buy some LED light bulbs. A few extra LED light bulbs. Maybe some more jeans. Things like that. But it's worth thinking about. What might I need over the next 5 years? Because what's going to have to happen is a lot of the manufacturing is going to have to come to North America. It's either going to be in America itself, or Canada, or Mexico. And maybe a country or two in Central or South America. But certainly in North America. But that takes time. It takes time to spin factories up. You know, and then there's a kind of a labor shortage. Hey, we've aborted all these, you know, like 30 or 40 million people have been aborted, at least, that would be working age right now, but, oops, sorry, they were aborted. for the sake of convenience. You know, so... But it's worth thinking about. It really is, apart from food, you know, yeah, you need to get your food. Need to have some sort of food supply, you know, some idea of how you're going to do it. Now, do I think anybody's going to starve and, I think that what's going to, most likely, there's going to be shortages, there's going to be some empty shelves of this and that. But overall, I think the stuff's going to be there, it's just going to be at a higher price. So as I've said before, you know, it's costing me to eat twice a day, let's say in a Denny's or whatever. It's costing me upwards of $50 to eat twice a day. It's like the two meals that I had, or I had one earlier this morning. It was like 23 something with tax. And then the one that I ate later in the day in Twin Falls, Idaho, is a truck stop restaurant. That was with the tip. It was 23 something. So I spent $47 today on eating out twice. I expect that could easily double. Just imagine you go in your Denny's and the bill for one person eating is $50. That could happen. So I'm mentally prepared for that to happen. Do I think it will happen? I don't know. Hope not. But I'm mentally prepared for that to be the eventuality. So, but anyway, I have a Voxer file from Jeremy. I haven't heard from Jeremy in quite some time, but I've got a Voxer file from him, and so here is Jeremy.
All right. Well, I haven't tried this in a while. How you doing, Tom? It's Jeremy again, back from the dead. I obviously have been busy doing life, and I have started tuning into your podcast here and there again. At least once in a while when I find time. So, I wanted to weigh in on a gun control topic, because obviously this is all the rage right now. And I think there's some really poor arguments being put on by the so-called 2A crowd that are really just ineffective. And I think in some ways they help. They help the more liberal gun-grabbing types make their argument. And now, recently, with the latest... Sorry, I'm in my car, so if you hear some background noise, I apologize for that. The latest I've heard around this Highland Park shooting near Chicago was... And it's always the same thing. It's like, oh, all of these places where there's the most gun violence, they're all liberal strongholds, and they have some of the strongest gun control legislation in the whole country, and they're not doing a thing. And I just don't think that makes sense, because obviously if you could go somewhere else, buy a gun, and bring it to where you are, you can't point to the laws as being ineffective, because they're using the laws of another locale that are less restrictive to buy the firearm and bring them to where they are. So that just makes the argument that if the gun laws were stricter elsewhere, those guns wouldn't be accessible. We can't pretend that that's not true. Like, we can't pretend that the UK has as much gun violence as the United States has. They don't have as many guns. Therefore, they have fewer gun crimes. And that's never the argument we should be making. The argument we should be making is an undeniable right to self-defense at any cost, and by any means. So there should be, and by say any cost, I mean like personal cost, like you should be able to go to whatever measure you feel is necessary to defend your person and your private property. And it's not about how many people die at this parade or that parade. Like, we always focus on these, and I think errantly, like, we focus on these emotional arguments, and it just doesn't make sense. I don't know why we fall for this. The argument is not, okay, well, yeah, some common sense restrictions make sense, because that always turns into more restrictions. The argument should never be like, oh, well, you have some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country, so, you know, how come you have the most violent cities? And the answer to that is obvious, because the criminals go elsewhere to get guns. And I think it's funny, because recently I heard a reaction on Twitter to, it was just after the Roe v. Wade thing, they were talking about, oh, let's go burn down cities and, you know, let's rage. And people were worried that there were going to be more riots and looting and fires and all that stuff in, like, the large cities. And some petulant liberal voice popped up on Twitter, and he started saying, like, oh, yeah, well, if you want to really lay the hurt where it belongs, go into the rural communities, go into Trump country, and find those people and burn their cities down. And it's just funny, because you're like, you could say that all day, but you know why that doesn't happen, right? Like, because people in those areas have guns, and they will not give them up. And so we also can't pretend that the inverse isn't true. Like, it is true that if there are fewer guns, there are fewer gun crimes. It's just true. But that's not the point. Like, that should never be, like, the argument that we, as, you know, constitutional conservatives, that we place our emphasis on. The emphasis should be on the fact that we have a constitutional right to bear arms and an inherent right to defend ourselves and our liberty and our private property. And that's up to us to be able to do that. Like, we get to choose how we do that. I also don't even like it when people start saying, like, oh, well, what do you want, a rocket launcher? And my answer to that is yes. And then they say, what do you want, a nuclear weapon? And I say, yes. Everything's on the table. Like, if I want to buy a tank and I have the means, I should be able to do that. And I think, like, I'm a purist in those lines. Like, if I say, like, there is no unreasonable amount of self-defense that I should be able to present as long as I'm on my own property or defending my own person. There should be no limits put upon that, and there shouldn't be anything seen as unreasonable in that realm. If I'm protecting my person or my family, then everything's on the table as far as I'm concerned. And if that means I can buy a nuclear arsenal, then I should be able to buy a nuclear arsenal. So I maintain consistency on that. When people challenge me on that, like, oh, what do you want, a rocket launcher, a flamethrower? I say, yes, I should be able to have all of those things. Because the counter is, and the counter should always be, whatever tools the government has, we should be able to have as well. So if they can have fighter planes, then I should be able to have a fighter plane. There should be no distinction between the people and the government. The government is supposed to be of the people, and therefore they shouldn't have bigger and better toys than their own citizenry. And so in that way, I maintain, like, ardent consistency there. Because once you start backing down from that, then you start conceding, and you start making room for the government to make policy. And I'm pure constitutional carry. Like, there should be no limits on what I can carry. If I can lift it, I should be able to bring it with me to the movie theater to protect myself. And that's just what I believe. Now, I do believe that the movie theater, as a private business, has the right to tell people, please don't bring your grenade launchers. And then if you want to be a customer there, that you should abide by that request, or you're trespassing. So, I mean, I try my best to be consistent there. But I just think that this thing about, like, oh, they have the strictest gun laws in the country, but they still have the most gun violence, it's just not a good argument. I wish people would stop making it. Like, there's no way that you could say, in a free society where you can move from one state to another and where policies are going to be different, literally in Chicago, you know, you can cross the border into Wisconsin and have less restrictive gun laws. You can't make that argument. Like, it's just not a good argument. So it will always be true that where there are more guns, there's more safety. And it will always be true that where there are less guns, there is more safety. Like, both can be true. But the reality is that most of America is somewhere in the middle, where you have half the people who think that, you know, guns are good, and they have a bunch of them, and then you have half the people who think that guns are bad, and not only do they not have any, but they want to take yours too. And so that's just the bipolar society we live in. Anyway, I have some more thoughts that I might share later on, but I wanted to keep it pretty short. Just wanted to check in and say hi. Hope you're safe out there. Hope you're doing well. And I would love to hear more about, if you have time to talk about it, you know, how you're doing in this economy where we have pretty much like a dire need for transportation and supply chain labor. So I'd love to hear you talk about that and the whole supply chain issue. Anyway, all right. Talk to you soon, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, I've always thought that was kind of a stupid argument myself, as far as, you know, well, they have the most restrictive gun laws, and so therefore, you know, they've got more, you know, they've got all this gun crime. You know, and if you're going to, you know, and I can understand why they say that, but they're not saying, you know, if you're going to use that argument, what you want to do is kind of not just say it that way, and, you know, not even present that. It's a dumb argument, because obviously you go across state lines to get the guns. A really better way to look at it is what you just said. You know, why aren't they trying to go into, you know, rural towns and burn those down? You know, how come mass shootings aren't happening in you know, in more rural areas? You know, they do, and I'm not saying that they don't have, they happen in school, like Uvalde, Texas. I don't know how big, it's not a giant city, and it's in Texas, but, and you would think that it would be, that's not exactly where you'd expect a school shooting to happen, but it did. So it did, and it can, but it was in school. You know, it wasn't, you know, I was in this restaurant, tell a story. I was in this when I was home for time off. I met my parents over in Grove, Oklahoma, and while, you know, because they're there in an RV park, and that's where they got their RV parked at right now. And it was, you know, Grove is a kind of a, you know, it's got a lake, and it's kind of a, you know, like a sort of a tourist RV area, you know, like RV resort type area. But anyway, you know, and there's RV parks and what have you around the lake. So anyway, we went, while I was there, before I left, we went to this, met my youngest brother, and we went to this, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, cafe type place there in Grove, Oklahoma. You know, not a fancy place at all. The food was decent. But in the meantime, you know, kind of watching the other people come and go while we were there. And there was this gentleman who was probably, he looked like he was in his 60s probably around my age, maybe a little bit older. He was open carrying. You know, it wasn't concealed carry. He was open carrying. And he wasn't, you know, he was just, you know, probably retired, maybe. I don't know. But he was open carrying. And so you have, do you think somebody's going to come in a place like that and try to shoot it up? Of course not. You know, so those kind of places where there are guns, generally people are on better behavior. As a rule. So that is really what needs to be pointed out. And then, and then when they say, oh, Chicago, whatever, you know, what I like to do is point out the fact, you know, all of the demographic, you know, the problems, you know, the children being born outside of marriage. you know, and then the deinstitutionalization. Those types of problems. You know, oh, we'll have red flag laws. Well, you know, instead of red flag, you know, let's why don't we just have mental institutions? Can we bring those back? Let's bring back the state-run mental institutions. Was that a perfect system? No, it wasn't. It was highly imperfect, but it was better than just dumping those people out. Oh, we're going to mainstream here. Take your pill. They don't take them. Take your pill so it zonks you out so you don't try to shoot everybody. You know, so there are solutions to these problems. You know, and then the idea, well, the UK doesn't have as much gun violence. Well, you know, for one thing, it's a different society. And for another, they've got all kinds of knife violence. You know, look it up. They've talked about, they've had people seriously talking about banning knives. You know, have knife control, essentially. Have knife control in the UK. There are people that have actually seriously proposed that the public not be allowed to have knives because there's so many stabbings and there's so much knife violence in the UK. You know, and then, you know, also a country like Israel. Israel's got all kinds of guns just everywhere. Do they have the problem that we do with all these mass shootings? No. Isn't that interesting? So you just take the guns, you know, they're using this. They don't really care about the people that are shot. They may say they do, and it's all emotional and what have you. They don't care. It's just a means to an end. They want to take the guns away. And once they take the guns away, Canada, Australia, once they take the guns away, you're screwed. Then they start with the harder tyranny. Canada's gone to hell. The Canadians may not realize it, but Canada's international reputation is in the toilet. As well as Australia's. Australia used to be, you know, used to people, you know, I certainly thought of Australia as this wonderful little country down under, and it was, kind of a Western country, and it was pretty decent. And with all the stuff that's happened over the past couple of years, of course, they took their guns away a few years ago. All the stuff that's gone on there, it's an urban hellhole. You know, Canada, we don't like you. We're going to freeze your bank account. You know, who wants to live in a country like that? Who even wants to, you know, maybe you have to live there because you're there, but who wants to visit a country like that? You know? That's crazy. You know, and you may say, well, I don't want to visit the United States. It's too violent. Well, good. You know? And if you do visit the United States, stay the hell away from Chicago. Because it's a cesspool. Right along with New York City. And certainly parts of Los Angeles, you know, like L.A., San Francisco. There are places you stay away from. Now, the suburbs, a lot of the suburbs are fine. But stay away from, there's places you definitely want to stay away from. But so anyway, and I think, I don't know, you can say I'm conspiracy minded, but I think, you know, right now there's all kinds of pressure happening to, I think the left is really desperate because they know that the midterm elections are coming up, and they're doing whatever they possibly can to try to swing those back in their favor. And I think, you know, the more desperate they become, and then they also think, well, we can change the laws before the swing happens. That's another thing that they're thinking. So they pass unconstitutional laws to set unconstitutional precedents. So I think that they're trying, there are people that are desperately trying to push things as hard as they possibly can. Sorry, I've tuned out of that stuff. The only reason I even knew there was some sort of a shooting, I saw a headline somewhere. And I wasn't even really, it was by accident. Because that stuff goes on all the time. There's murder-suicides that happen constantly. Let alone, it's a parade in some, I guess this was in a Chicago suburb. Stay the hell away from Chicago. It's a hellhole. It's a cesspool. Why would you live there? People that have any sense whatsoever have gotten the hell out of there. So the other thing you're talking about was the supply chain issues, and that kind of goes back to if you haven't done so already, listen to the podcast prior to this one, 2116. The Peter Zion book. I highly recommend that book. And there's a bunch of interviews on YouTube where he's being interviewed. And he talks about these things. But the supply chain is, things are not going to go back to what they were prior to the pandemic. Or there's going to be ongoing issues, and they're likely to get worse. People are going to blame this and blame that, but and some of it can be blamed, but on other things. But there are some major geopolitical reasons why these things are going to break down. These supply chains that we have on many products are just utterly ridiculous. It's just crazy. And it only works when the situation was ideal, especially with the secure shipping that just happened just like clockwork. Everything's just in time, even crossing the ocean, just in time. A lot of that stuff is just, it's going to break. And so there's going to be a period of time where, and we can't really predict it, but there's going to be a period of time where some products are just not, they're just not going to be available, or the cheap versions of them aren't going to be available. Somebody's going to scramble, and let's say jeans, just to pick something out of the air, the cheap jeans aren't available anymore. Yeah, you can still buy more expensive ones that somebody's making. You know, you could buy made in the USA jeans. You know, it's probably going to cost you $100 a pair, or maybe $200 a pair, depending. You know, so possibly the same way with shoes. You know, people, you know, there's different shoes that are made in different places. But it's certainly worth thinking about what do I need? What might I need in, let's say, the next 5 years before, you know, maybe 5 years before things really kind of straighten out a little bit. You know, before some of the manufacturing is brought back to North America. So it may be, you know, and that'll happen. But, you know, in the meantime, there's going to be things that just aren't available, or they're available at a really high price. You know, and you may just have to make do with used things. You know, and that's probably not going to be the end of the world. It's the end of the world as you knew it, maybe. But life goes on. We adapt. But it is worth thinking about. It's certainly worth thinking about. What do I need that, do I think I might need, you know, over the next 5 years? You know, kind of a thought experiment. You know, think ahead. What do I think I might need? Like light bulbs, LED light bulbs. Something, you know, maybe for some people it might be tools of some sort, little electric hand tools, those sorts of things. Things you might need that would be good to have ahead, just in case. Worst case scenario, let's say you buy a drill, an extra drill or two, or an extra package of light bulbs, LED light bulbs. Eventually, you'll use them. Instead of, you know, because as consumers, we tend to think we're part of the just-in-time. We're the last element on the chain, typically, but we're part of the just-in-time. Oh, we'll just go to the supermarket, or we'll go to the big box store and buy whatever, because it just happens to be there just when I need it. Well, that system is breaking down. That system is coming to an end. So, you know, so it's worth thinking about. It's absolutely worth thinking about. So, you know, and I may have talked about this before. You know, we've got this idea, well, we're gonna cancel you. You know, we're going to cancel you off of whatever. You've had people that get quote unquote canceled. What is that about? And I may or may not have talked about this, but the people that would do cancel, you know, we're going to cancel somebody. Especially the left, but it could happen on the right as well, but people that are ideologically possessed, and you can think of ideological possession, think of those as crippled, sort of like crippled religions, because people have these ideologies, could be one idea and or a set of ideas, and they believe this is everything flows from this one idea or set of ideas, and so therefore, you know, anything that doesn't fit within that framework will just, everything, you know, they believe that everything has to fit within the framework. But it's an ideology. Now, you know, let's say like with Apple, for example, the Apple computers. Love to use those as a perfect example of a ideological possession. Another way of looking at ideological possession is it results in cult-like behavior, cultish behavior. So Steve Jobs was it's kind of a crippled religion. So Steve Jobs was a savior. Of course, you had the products. You were superior if you used the Apple products. You have your iPhone and your Mac, and you're so superior to those lowlifes that are using Microsoft Windows and Android phones. You're superior to them. Okay. You know, and in Apple's product reveals, those are the revivals. You know, and then they bring in people from other companies to speak at those events. Those are the visiting preachers. But then you also have excommunication. You know, and I've heard some of these people, I don't have anything to do with people that don't have apples. If somebody has, I don't have friends that, all of my friends have Apple computers. I won't associate with people that have Windows computers or that have Android phones. I've heard people say that before. So the idea that you're going to cancel, you know, that somebody's going to get canceled off of Facebook or canceled from this or canceled from that, or, you know, try to get people fired, it's basically excommunication. You don't think the way I do, therefore I'm going to excommunicate you. But, you know, people really need to realize that the way the human mind works, we put faith into things. We put faith into our ideas. We put faith into the models of how we believe that the world works. Ideally, we're really looking, you know, because if you think of it this way, there's reality, you know, you have reality, and then we have our perception of reality. Now, ideally, we want, and as our perception of reality, in an ideal situation, our perception of reality is as close to reality as is possible. But, you know, reality itself is just way, way, way too complicated, and there's so many unknowns. There's no way that we can, if you think about it, there's really no way that we can ever perfectly know all aspects of reality. That's not possible for us as human beings. So the best that we can do is be able to perceive whatever it is, our little corner of the world, of existence, perceive that, set up models for our little corner of the, whatever our little part of the world is, that can, you know, that come as close as possible to being able to perceive reality. So, but the problem is that it's easy for us to end up misperceiving. And of course, it goes back to resentment. Resentment just absolutely throws a monkey wrench into our ability to accurately perceive the world and accurately set up, certainly accurately set up, functioning models that are really functional. Resentment, whether you're aware that you have resentment or not, if it's in there and it's buried, it really does screw up your ability to accurately perceive the world. You know, so we have to put faith into the models that we have of the functional models of how the world works around us as individuals. You know, and you're either going to be successful at it or not. You know, and then you have people that are trying, they really do try to force they really think that they can just force everyone to think the same way that they do, and we're going to have utopia. So utopia will emerge. We can just force everyone to think one way. You know, and of course that goes back to the idea, is similar to the idea of people that are guilty. Because if you behave the wrong way, you do the wrong thing, and we all know, we all kind of have a built-in knowing of right and wrong. I know there are people that don't want to believe that, but it's really true. You know, you violate your conscience. You know what most people know when they're doing wrong. You do these things at your peril. And then you feel guilty, and then you want to think, well, if I can just force everyone to think that, think in a certain way, that whatever it is that I did that was wrong, whatever my behavior is that's wrong, if I can just force everyone to think the same way, that it's okay, it's really okay to kill your baby, to pick something out of the air, really okay to rape, rob, murder, steal, those things are really okay, then if we can force everybody to think that way, then I'm not going to be guilty anymore. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. You know, if you miss the mark, that's sin, in other words, you miss the mark, you're actually the loser. You know, you're degrading yourself. You're degraded. You're less than you could be. Than what you're not living up to the ideal. We all kind of know what the ideal should be. So. So anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. See if I can get it uploaded, and I need to get headed off to bed after that. So hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.